My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. Welcome 2021. It's our first show of the new year. And believe me, it's a very exciting show because New York State craft beer and malt has come so far in the last 8 years. And we're going to be talking with some important fellows from the New York State craft beer scene. So we're going to start by introducing everyone. First, Paul, please introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Paul Leone. I'm the executive director of the New York State Brewers Association. And Jimmy, I do miss doing this with you at Roberta's, I got to tell you.
I'm so glad you helped put the show together. Thank you, Paul. And then Dan?
Hey, everyone. My name is Daniel Sweeney. I'm a PhD student at Cornell University in plant breeding and genetics, and I'm working on malting barley breeding for New York State.
Great, man. And Jason?
Hey, everybody. My name is Jason Havens. I'm the president and co-owner of Rusty Nickel Brewing out in West Seneca, New York, and also the president of the Western New York Brewers Guild. And I have here with me Dave Johnson.
Yeah, and I'm the head brewer and co-owner at Rusty Nickel Brewing Company. And I like to dabble and play with all these fun New York malts that are coming out.
Well, that's great. So the backstory on this, Paul, was, you know, 2012, New York State started the farm brewery license, and one important part of it was the scaling in of the percentage of New York State ingredients that farm breweries would have to use. Do you want to give me a quick introduction to that and where we're at now, and then we'll talk about the barley story?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, back in 2012, the farm brewing license was created. And at that time, it was 20% New York State hops and 20% all other ingredients, excluding water. And then in 5 years' time, it would go to 60%. And then in 5 years' time, it would go to 90%. Actually, right now, we're in the 60% range right now. I think that the interesting part, you know, of it is, you know, back in the day when this was first created, it was not only to help the brewing industry, but it was also to help agriculture in New York State. The hops industry, which used to dominate the country pre-prohibition, the malt industry, which used to, gosh, I you know, I think Daniel, who we'll talk to later, I read a stat that there we led the country in growing, you know, barley as well in New York State, and all of a sudden prohibition comes, and those crops really kind of go away for the brewing industry. So when the farm brewing license was created, there were no malt houses in New York State, and I, you know, there were barely any hops being grown, and since that time, we now have, I believe, 12 malt houses in New York State. And we have 464 breweries, half of which have a farm brewing license. So it certainly did its job. The intent was to grow the brewing industry. The intent was to grow agriculture. And nobody had a crystal ball then. But I can tell you that it's been really successful so far. I mean, we have the second most breweries in the country, and our farm brewing law is a model right now for other states who are looking at us to do the same thing.
Well, it's an amazing story. And I remember back then, everyone thought, wow, that's a great idea to use New York State grains and hops. And what was funny is I don't think anyone had New York State barley in beer for a long time. And people were talking about, oh, we could be developing all these other varieties like rye, for example, which apparently doesn't really make a beer on its own. So let's get to Daniel. So developing the strain of barley, you know, give us the backstory. This really is what this whole show is about. The new barley, and we can announce the name, right? It's Excelsior Gold from Cornell.
Yeah, so I'll start out with kind of dovetailing with Paul, talking about the history just a little bit. So not only did New York used to produce a lot of hops back in the day, there's also some substantial barley production and malting in New York State. And by back in the day, I mean in the mid-early 1800s. There's some pretty cool maps that I found from an old barley breeder, published in a USDA bulletin that shows barley production in New York in that time. And it's kind of cool because the cluster is all in Western New York, right along the Erie Canal. So that's currently where some of the more agriculturally productive land, and at least for growing grains in New York, is in Western New York, kind of between Rochester and Buffalo. But back then it was producing a lot of barley because the population was a lot more focused in the East. But since then, and with Prohibition and some other, you know, population shifting westward and these sorts of things, barley really fell out of favor in New York for a long time. And one reason for that is that New York is a challenging place to grow barley. Upstate New York has really lovely summers, but they tend to be humid and have a lot of rain. And barley actually does better in cooler, drier environments. Most of the malting barley production in North America right now is out west in North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Canadian prairies, those sorts of places. So all that moisture brings a couple of challenges for growers and also malt houses and breweries. And the big two are diseases and something called pre-harvest sprouting. So for any brewers or maltsters who are listening, you're probably familiar with Fusarium head blight and the associated toxin called deoxynivalenol, which we tend to just call DON. It's a little bit less of a mouthful. But basically, Fusarium head blight is a fungus that infects wheat and barley and other grasses as well. But it will cause the kernels to become kind of discolored and shrunken. But it also produces a toxin, DON, that is not very good for humans or for animals. And the thresholds for DON in malting grade barley are very, very low. So that is something that can be at least partially controlled with fungicides, but that's a big target for malting barley production, is trying to handle Fusarium head blight. The other challenge that wet weather brings for malting barley production is pre-harvest sprouting. So when you're malting barley, you want it to sprout quickly and uniformly. That's what you need to make good malt. But barley breeders have done almost too good of a job sometimes, and we've developed a lot of barleys that sprout so well and so quickly that they will sometimes sprout in the field before they're even harvested if there's a big rain right before harvest. And because we get a lot of rain in New York, this can be in the summers, this can be a problem for us. So those are kind of two of our big targets, and that's why growing barley is tough in New York. And then you add on things like yield and malting quality and all these other things. There's a lot to work on, but it's been a fun challenge.
Let me move over to Dave for a minute. So, Dave, just give us your perspective on what malts you've used from New York State before this new variety. What it's been like the last few years for you at Rusty Nickel.
So right now we work with just a few malt houses out here in Western New York. And, you know, when we order our malts from them, we're usually getting our, you know, we obviously order our base malts first. So we're looking mostly at, pale malt and Pilsner malt for our usages. Just because we do have a close relationship with the malt houses, we actually know what varieties of barley we're getting from the different fields that they're getting them from, like Scala, for instance. But not necessarily all of them will give you that information. I mean, unless you ask. Really what we were looking for, especially, you know, 5 years ago, was just getting the moisture content right, you know, so that the grains didn't smear when you ground them, and that your efficiencies were up to par. Now that the grains have gotten so much better, we're down to the minutiae of varieties and the different qualities that we can expect that Dan was just speaking about. So, I mean, the fact that we're here in 5 years, I think, is a testament to all the work that's gone into this.
So back to Dan. So Dan, you know, let's go back to 2014, 2015. I know that Cornell surveyed a number of farmers growing grains. Yeah, what was the state of New York State's grain back then?
Right. So you mentioned that the Farm Brewery Bill was passed in 2012, I believe. And at that time, I was not in New York State then. I moved to Cornell from Indiana, but I moved here in 2015 to start my graduate work. But as far as I understand, from 2012 to 2014, there was not very much malting barley production in New York, and variety choice was somewhat limited. So my advisor, Dr. Mark Sorrells, who's the small grains breeder and a professor at Cornell, he brought me on to do this breeding work because he had spent those few years trialing a number of winter and spring malting barleys. So for those not familiar with growing barley, you can plant barley either in the fall, so in September or October in New York, and then it will grow a little bit in the fall, then over winter, kind of like you would seed grass seed on your lawn in the fall, and it survives the winter and starts again in the spring. Or you can plant barley in the spring, and then it just gets harvested a bit later in the summer. So we tested both of those. We also evaluated 2- and 6-row types. So again, just for those not familiar, that refers to the actual spike where the grain is. Some barleys have 6 rows of grain and some have 2. There's really not functionally a lot of difference between those. There's historically some preferences for brewers. 2 rows tend to be a little bit more uniform kernels, a little bit more plump, so maybe a little bit more malt extract. But the craft brewers in New York tend to be much more interested in 2 rows. So we focus our efforts there. And all the trialing that Mark did, we actually really couldn't find any malting barleys that really checked all the boxes for us, that had consistently good malting quality, that were not at high risk for pre-harvest sprouting, that just did decently well for the farmer, that had decent yield and decent disease resistance. And at the time, we were also having some issues with winter kill for barley, because upstate New York can also have some kind of nasty winters. And barley is not quite as tough at winter barley is not quite as tough as winter wheat is. We've since done more winter barley work, but so Mark kind of handed me the reins for the 2-row spring malting barley breeding program. So that's been my work at Cornell. And, you know, so talking about varieties a little bit, the job of a plant breeder is to take existing variation in whatever your crop species is, and to try to identify lines that are mostly what you want. It's hard to get something that's 100% good, but we did identify some spring malting barley lines, things like AAC Synergy, Kraft, which is from Montana State, KWS Tinka, which is a European variety, Pinnacle, another North Dakota line, and a few others. We identified those as having some good traits that we were interested in. And then my work has been to cross those, to interbreed those lines, and then to develop new populations to screen through and try to find plant types that are better than those parents that we started with. And usually that process takes 8 to 10 years. There's a lot of time to get genetically stable plant types, and you know, farming, you're growing things in different years and different locations, and the weather changes from year to year. So to be confident that we've picked something good, we need to test it repeatedly in multiple locations in multiple years. So all that can take quite a while, but we've used a couple tools, mostly something called genomic selection, which kind of uses the basic genetic information of the plant types and some statistical modeling to help us predict which plants are going to perform best overall. And that can help us speed up the breeding process a little bit. So I made the first crosses in the spring of 2016, and we formally released the variety earlier this year, which is cutting off 3 or 4 years of the breeding process, which we were pretty excited about. The seed is not quite available to farmers yet, but hopefully it will be very soon.
Great. Now I'm going to go back to Jason. So Jason, just overview. So you're very involved in Western New York craft brewing and all that. How have you guys followed and seen this whole process of phasing in the farm brewery requirements and the growth of New York State malt?
So the phasing in has been, on the brewer side, has actually been a little bit of a challenge, but also an exciting challenge. And I say that because with the phasing of the percentages all the way through the last 5 or 6 years, and then again here in the next 2 years, going from 60% to 90%, we're really literally experimenting on every batch. A lot of the breweries across the country dial in a recipe and stick to that exact recipe for the duration of their entire brewing operation. And in the meantime, we are essentially sliding in New York State grains whenever possible to a recipe and trying to get to as close to 100% or at 100% of our beers utilizing New York State grains as possible. So over the last 5 or 6 years that we've been in operation, this has been the challenge and the exciting part of brewing for us, in that we are constantly tweaking the recipes ever so slightly in every batch to go from, say, 20% of one ingredient to 22% or 23%, and then eventually ramping that up as much as possible to eliminate some of the national grains from the recipe altogether and replacing them entirely with New York State grains. So that what that's doing is it's actually creating kind of a ultra local presence in the beers. And we actually just this coming Friday will be releasing a beer that demonstrates this threshold of 100% grains from New York State and an educational component for the community. And that's been the biggest challenge, is informing the community of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how it impacts them on an economic level. So, for example, what we started with when we were opening up was really a small percentage of New York State grains, because we understood that we could utilize national brands with a lot of information from the testing side of things. We knew exactly what we were going to get. So as we started blending them year after year after year, you know, what would be 20% is now 80%, in some cases 100%. And what we're finding is that the consumer, over the years, as long as we don't make an extreme change, drastic change overnight, they're actually buying into this, and they're finding that they really can't tell the difference as long as the ingredients are of the same quality. And we are finding that over the last 5 years, the ingredients have come tremendous ways with the quality and the consistency. And that has made a world of difference on the brewing side and the consumer expectation side. So this for us is not just an experimentation, but a practice in healthy economics and local economics. And it's an opportunity for us to educate people both on the industry itself from the agricultural side of things, and also the economic impact that it has to the local economy. So this is really a very interesting bill that was introduced, and something that when we saw it was intriguing to us, because it's important to many people that when you're utilizing local ingredients, you're supporting the local economy. So New York State, you know, identified that as an opportunity area, and with the farm brewery bill implementation, kind of kickstarted that. And again, as Paul alluded to earlier, created an opportunity for other states to model after what New York has done. And really, we've come such a long way in such a short amount of time. We still have a little bit of ways to go, but it plays evidence to the fact that where there's a will, there's a way. And as long as everybody's buying into it, these situations where you want to create sustainability and you want to create a new economic opportunity are truly possible by just putting in the efforts at all levels. And in this case, it's both development, as Daniel's alluding to, and also the production with the farmers, and then utilization with the brewers. And of course, the entire driving factor is whether or not the consumer is going to buy into it. And we are proving daily that that is actually something that they value. And one of the ways that we've actually done that and highlighting that, as I said earlier, is that we're releasing a beer that all of the farm breweries in Western New York got together to collaborate on. It's called Oh Fudge, and it's an Imperial Porter. And that beer, every aspect of that beer is done with local ingredients. Even the canning, the can art, and the marketing was all done by local groups. And this is exactly the kind of thing that is inspiring interest in the beer geek community. And just yesterday, we kind of toyed with that as kind of a prelude to this, and tried to say, you know, do you find local beer made with local ingredients more intriguing or less intriguing when you're looking to purchase a beer? And overwhelmingly, people said that it's more important to them that they're buying a local beer made with local ingredients. So we've got the data on the consumer side, and we're seeing tremendous strides on the development side. So as a whole, the industry really is getting closer and closer to complete sustainability within the state.
Yeah, that's great, Jason. So now I'm going to go back to Daniel. I'm going to ask a different question. Daniel, like the going back to grains, so what's the difference between growing barley or grains for livestock and growing it for malting barley?
Sure. So there are a couple different classes of barley. It's usually malt, feed, or food. So food is for human consumption and feed is for animal feed. So the biggest thing for malting barley is that it needs to have just the right balance of protein and beta-glucan. So protein is really important in a lot of parts of beer in terms of, you know, having foam retention and also something for the yeast to munch on while they're fermenting, the sugars from the malt, but then also just for some body to the beer as well. But you don't want too much protein. So if it gets above 12%, that's kind of the danger zone. And I think even for craft malts, really closer to 10% is the sweet spot. But then beta-glucan is a polysaccharide that is kind of, helps form the cell walls in the barley grain. And beta-glucan is what makes your oatmeal sticky. So this is found in other grains besides barley, but beta-glucan is actually really good for human health, but it's not good for making good beer. Because if you can think about, from a brewing perspective, if you have basically oatmeal in your mash tuns or anything you're trying to, you know, move through a tube, that's going to be a bad day. So feed barleys for animal feed tend to have higher protein, higher beta-glucan. So they are really not good for making malt at all. They also tend to germinate very slowly. And as the maltsters say, they don't modify very well. So the malting process is all about kind of breaking down the matrix of protein and beta-glucan that's surrounding these little starch granules. And during the malting process, you're kind of, it's like opening a bunch of Christmas gifts all at once. You're tearing the wrapping paper off, opening the boxes, and getting to what you really want that's inside. And what we really want during the malting process is that starch to be available so that that can eventually be turned into sugar. The beginning part of the brewing process.
So, and then Dan, going to the testing and the trials, how did you guys get farmers to work with you? What kind of education were you doing? Because this is obviously you had to grow this barley in different parts of the state.
Yeah. So we did have somewhat of an existing testing network. My boss, Mark, has been breeding wheat at Cornell for a very long time, and there are regional testing, you know, across New York for wheat. So we tend to just kind of tack on the barley there. But we did have a couple of people like Ted Hawley with New York Craft Malt in Batavia, New York, who have been really great partners. And he has some land that he's let us plant trials on. So that's been really helpful. I also want to mention Dr. Gary Bergstrom, who is an extension pathologist at Cornell, but he's worked a lot with this malting barley outreach and education program as well. So we've worked with him on some disease testing and trialing too. I think the malting barley community is pretty small, but tight-knit and supportive in New York. So, you know, we try to do our testing in areas where malting barley is being grown. So we do have some in the Finger Lakes, but then also, again, a few sites out in Western New York where the majority of the grains are being grown. And we've had, we also have field days with Cornell where we share what we've learned throughout the year with our research with growers and maltsters and brewers and anybody who's generally interested in malting barley. And then there's also an annual Empire Malt and Barley Conference that's been going on for the past 4 years or so.
So if you guys have made this variety and you think that sometime in 2021, some brewers will start using it, how long does it take to propagate, you know, to get this variety out there? And also, will you be making other strains of it?
Yeah, so we grew a fairly large field of our of the new variety, which again is called Excelsior Gold. It's a two-row spring malting barley. We grew a large seed increase of that last summer in 2020. And that then we got, not exactly sure how much grain we got from that, but quite a bit. I think the hope is to have it of at least available on a limited basis this summer. I'm not entirely sure on that. It might be 2022 before it's really widely available. But I'm hoping that it can at least get in the hands of some brewers and maltsters this summer. And again, since that's a spring barley, that means you plant it in April and that'll get harvested in probably early August. And we do have more more experimental lines coming behind them. There's one other line that is the fruit of my research that is that I'm pretty excited about. It's one step behind where Excelsior Gold is in terms of how much seed we have, but I think that's a really nice candidate as well. And then we also have, we started a winter malting barley breeding program because winter malting barley has actually become a little bit more popular in New York. And I think a lot of the growers have learned how to manage that really well. And I know Jason or Dave mentioned Scala. That's a very popular winter line that growers in New York like. But we're hoping that we can have something that's a little bit better adapted to the unique features of New York. So yeah, we're working on the winter stuff too.
Well, that's great. That's a great intro. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I'm able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is our first show of 2021. We're talking about a new New York State barley strain. Let's go back to Paul Leone, New York State Craft Brewers Guild. Paul, the big news of the fall was that there was this new strain of New York State barley that was going to be really important for breweries, and there was a naming competition. So how did that go? I know we missed the winner, but it's Excelsior Gold is the name of this barley. Tell us the response to that, and you know a little bit of the we needed good news this year. Let's put it that way. And this is good news for New York if you're thinking long term.
There were a lot of responses, and there were a lot of great suggestions. You know, Excelsior Gold was obviously the name, but there were some, you know, there were some dumb ones like Multi McMalt Face and some other ones, of course, that you would expect people to put in. My favorite was Ezra's Pride. That's the one I voted for, but didn't get picked. Which is I never knew Cornell, Ezra Cornell, was the namesake for Cornell University. So I thought that was great. Then we tried to, a lot of people wanted to name it Sorrel, Mark Sorrel, who was the you know, one of the masterminds behind it, but he's like, oh, you got to be dead in order really to get that naming. So we would rather have him alive. So needless to say, long story short, there were a lot of great, great suggestions. And Excelsior Gold really made sense. I mean, I think it's the obvious choice. And you know, it's just the, you know, we're talking about malt, but, you know, we've been trying to do the same thing for hops as well. You know, Cornell has really led the way in New York State in terms of, you know, creating such a thing. You know, I mean, they really created a new barley strain, and we would love for them to do hops. So I think that the farm, the brewing industry in New York and agriculture in general would be much further behind if it wasn't for the really incredible brains behind the folks at Cornell and Daniel and Mark and Gary Bergstrom and all the great folks there. That are doing great work for the beer industry, kind of behind the scenes and silently. So it's really cool that you're shining a light on this.
Great. And I'm back to Daniel. So Daniel, keep telling us. I'm sure there's quite a few points that you can share with us that we wouldn't even know to ask of you.
Yeah, well, I can go just a little bit more into Excelsior Gold briefly. For those that don't know, Excelsior is actually the state motto of New York. So that's why that is kind of the natural fit, as Paul said. And then, you know, barley is this really lovely gold color as it's maturing, and beer is usually gold, and hopefully it's profitable for growers and maltsters and breweries in New York. So the gold just all kind of works well together. So there's all of that. One thing I did want to mention before I forgot, we have had a lot of really incredible support for this project. The only reason we've been able to do this breeding program so quickly, you know, and genomic selection is not cheap. We have to genotype hundreds to thousands of experimental barley lines to find the ones that are going to be the best for our conditions. And we also utilized off-season nurseries in New Zealand to basically get two growing seasons per year. And that costs a lot of money. But we've had really great support from New York Ag and Markets, but also the Genesee Valley Regional Market Authority, as well as the American Malting Barley Association and the Brewers Association. So kind of all these different tiers of support have really come together and allowed us to really achieve this release in a very quick amount of time. So just out for anybody that is interested in the nitty gritty details of Excelsior Gold, the things that I'm excited about for Excelsior Gold and why we think it will be a better option than what is out there currently for spring malting barley. It has very good foliar disease resistance. There are some diseases that attack the leaves of barley, namely something called spot blotch. So Excelsior Gold keeps clean green leaves throughout the growing season, which helps boost yield. It's a little bit earlier maturing, which we found is tends to be a better thing for New York. It has at least average fusarium head blight resistance. That was something we looked at, but was not our primary breeding target. But it's not worse than any of our other options out there. But it has very good pre-harvest sprouting resistance, which is something that we were really, really focused on. And it does have pretty good malting quality as well. We've used the cultivar AAC Synergy, which is a Canadian variety, is our standard for malting quality. That's bred for Western Canada and makes really nice malt, but it's also very risky because it's very prone to sprout damage in the field, which kind of ruins its ability to make good malt. So we think that we've done a lot of research here trying to look at the connection between pre-harvest sprouting and malting quality, because usually you can't have your cake and eat it too. Usually pre-harvest sprouting resistance means poor malting quality and vice versa. But we're hoping that we can, and we are optimistic that we can combine both of those. So I've spent a lot of my time at Cornell working on that project as well.
Now, I'm going to throw this out to the floor. I don't know if Dave or Jason or Daniel wants to answer this question. Ever since the 2012 and the farm brewery licenses, I think there's been some talk, maybe just from me, that one day, based on an ingredient, I used to think it would be rye, based on an ingredient, there could be a New York style of beer, the same way that some distillers have seized on rye as their empire rye. Do you think that this barley is going to impact a style or taste of New York beer and elevate it, or is this just a base and we're just getting started?
From the breeding side, our goal actually is to not have an impact flavor too much. Our goal is to have a barley variety that makes ideally great base malt, because that's what most brewers are using most often. So hopefully it's kind of a palette for them to do whatever they want to do with it. I would think maybe that the New York grown hops have a little bit more regional character, or even terroir, if you want to say that. Hopefully the barley just makes good beer, but that's from the breeder's perspective. So the brewers might have something else to say about that.
Great. And Dave?
Yeah, he echoed what I was just about to say, honestly. One of our goals as a farm brewery from the friendly get-go was to try to be on the forefront of developing whatever that New York style might be. We haven't done it yet. Like Dan was saying, hops are going to give it more of that character. But my personal opinion is I would love to see a new style come out that isn't IPA, that isn't stout, that isn't something we've seen yet. I don't know what it is, but maybe this is the driving force that gets us there. When all of these new ingredients that are being developed and grown in New York State are the driving forces in what we as brewers brew. So, you know, we use those ingredients. They do, you know, have their own flavor to them. And people start getting used to that, and then they start desiring that. We might get to a point where there'll be regional New York State styles, something we also would love to see. It is heading in that direction. Don't know what it is yet, but, you know, as more and more hops get developed and more malts get developed and different malting processes get developed, we get different flavors. And, you know, if you get some you know, brewers out there who are really willing to go out on a limb a little bit and try these things and be kind of at the forefront, they'll reap the benefits as they develop these things along the way. Instead of being late to the party, they could be some of the ones developing some of the new styles that we hope to see in the future. I hope to be one of the ones who does that. So we're on board with trying all the new stuff. So
great. So Dave, when you hear about a new strain of barley or malt like this, what are some questions that you ask? If you don't mind asking Dan a question or two that he can answer.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. I was just thinking that as he was speaking. I do agree that the effort at the beginning should be base malts and, you know, trying to get the consistency and all the things the maltsters are looking for so that they can give us a consistent and quality product. I'm more curious from the maltster's point of view is what else can they do with this new variety? They may be able to develop some different types of methodologies with this grain that produces something really neat. I mean, we've worked directly hand in hand with Niagara Malt, Bob Johnson out there, and he developed a honey style malt like Gambrinus makes honey malt. He makes one now called Mille d'Or that we use all the time that he developed. We worked back and forth and we did brews and we gave him feedback, and he tweaked his methodology to make this malt for us, based on the base malts that he gets. So I'm wondering if something like that is in our future. And I don't know if Dan can answer something like that, but I mean, working directly with the maltsters, they're kind of the in between the growers and the brewers. So, you know, what that they can come up with for us to use, we're definitely all ears.
Yeah, you know, I think that I realized pretty early on in my time in the barley world in New York, the malt houses are really key in all of this. They're kind of the go-between the growers and the brewers, and we've had some really fantastic malting partners in the breeding process too. And again, I think our goal as breeders is we want to release a product, a barley variety, that is consistent and relatively easy to grow for the farmer, but also that the malt house can use how they want it to use. I think a lot of that creativity is probably going to come from the malt house, where they're trying new styles, new flavors, you know, small batches. I know that there's, you can get all sorts of different malts from New York, smoked, roasted, all different sorts of grains. And again, on the barley side, we kind of just want to be this blank canvas where the maltster can manipulate it however they want based on what their customer, the brewer, wants. So hopefully we've been able to do that with Excelsior Gold and any varieties we release going forward. But I agree that a New York regional style beer would be really exciting. I mean, the New England IPA was kind of an organic thing that kind of came out of, it had been bubbling for a while and then kind of blasted on a scene. Now everybody makes New England IPAs, and it would be really fun to see something from New York have the same impact.
No, that's for sure. Are there any other grains that you guys are working with at Cornell that with the intention of making them better for beer?
So not besides barley. We do work on wheat, and we trial some rye, and we also do a little bit of oats. But we're not evaluating oats or rye specifically for brewing. I know that we've tested a couple of our white winter wheats. I think Medina, Mark might be upset if I get them wrong. I don't work on the wheat so much, but I think it's Medina that has a nice malting profile, because wheat is a pretty common addition to obviously wheat beers, but even in things like you know, New England style IPAs, as I mentioned, they have, part of the reason they're so cloudy is they have a lot of oats and some other, and sometimes wheat in there as well. So there's a lot of room to put New York grains in beer that's not barley, but we're mostly focused on barley from the brewing side right now.
Yeah. And then what about the cost? I mean, is that something that you guys are talking about at Cornell, the cost, you know, for the brewers to use these new varieties?
Not from the breeding program too much. I know that there are a number of Cornell Cooperative Extension folks that I think are a little bit more involved in the economics of it. What I'm doing is more focused on just trying to provide a new variety, a new product for the farmers to grow. So I'm not the best person to ask about that. Perhaps Paul has something, might have a better idea of that than me.
Yeah, Paul, you want to join in and tell us about like the impact? You know, we're getting close to 90% New York State ingredients for farm breweries. Give us a little more big picture and how brewers choose the, you know, the price point of their malt, and choosing a local beer, local malt might be more expensive, especially in the early stages.
Yeah, buying local certainly is more expensive, which I know, you know, a lot of brewers can tell you. You know, we as an association, when this law was, you know, created in 2012, you really had to put your stake in the ground without really knowing what the future held. So it was 20, 60, 90. You know, looking at it today in 2021, the association actually last year, you know, we took a hard look at the law, how many brewers were using local grains, and we actually are going to try to modify it by making it. So right now it's, if you have a farm brewing license and a farm brewing license only, that means no, not adding a micro license to it or anything else. You know, every single beer you make has to be 60% hops and 60% all other ingredients, excluding water. And so, you know, we felt that if we modified the law just a little bit, we would get even more brewers on board. So what we're going to put in legislation to modify the law to make it 60% in aggregate, meaning that, you know, 60% by the end of the year, you know, 60% of all ingredients that, you know, that you put in your beer is the 60% hops and all other ingredients. And then the other 40%, you can make the New England IPAs and some of the other beers that you are a little bit more challenging. I wouldn't say impossible, but a little bit more challenging due to the fact that you're dealing with proprietary hops and other things that you can't grow in New York State. So I guess to make a long story short, we're really trying to make the law more flexible, so more brewers who are on the fence about using New York will start using New York and maybe add the farm license to their micro license or whatever license they have to further advance the industry. And we really, we have a farm brewing committee that's pretty active. And so we really don't think that we should get to the 90%, which is supposed to be in 2024. So we might try to kill that altogether and just run with the 60%. So we are looking at some modifications, which time has allowed us to sort of take a step back and figure out. And we feel like that, you know, more brewers are getting on board with local. In the early days, it was always like, I'm not going to use local because the hops sucks and the barley sucks and it's crap. And I think that, you know, the maltsters that got on board in the early days, you got to understand that malting is a craft like brewing is a craft. And in the early days, they were trying to hone in their craft. Today, I don't hear any of that anymore. I think that all of the maltsters in New York State have really refined their craft. And there's no reason why any brewer should be hesitant to use locally grown malt. And the farmers, too, growing the barley are just so smart and so, skilled at growing. It's really hard to grow barley. You know, one weekend rain can ruin an entire crop. And so it's tricky, as Dan said earlier, to grow, barley in New York State, but everything seems to be coming together. And we're really happy where things are right now.
Great. And Paul, what's one question for Dan that I didn't ask?
Well, it's funny, one thing I learned about barley is the word Don. And Don, I didn't know could be toxic. So when you talk about how tricky it is, which the public doesn't know, how tricky it is to grow barley in New York State. Dan, talk about really how tricky it is, how hard it is for farmers to grow barley that can be malted for brewers.
Sure. So the really tricky thing about this disease, Fusarium head blight, is that one, the conditions in New York are often perfect for it. The fungus loves warm, humid, wet weather, which again, if you spend any time in upstate New York, that is not uncommon in the summers. But the other really tricky thing is that you can see the effects of the fungus if you're walking through a field. It's called a blight. So that the kernels are kind of brown and shriveled. You can tell there's something wrong with them. But the toxin level is often not correlated with the visual disease symptoms. So you can have your field can look pretty clean if you're walking through and scouting it, but you can still have a Don toxin problem. And the real issue here is that, so the Don is actually water soluble. So when you're making the malt, the first step is to steep it in water. And a lot of that Don will actually wash out in that steep water. But again, the fungus is still living on those grains, and the fungus likes warm, humid conditions, which it has in abundance in the malt house. So you can have extra fungal growth as you're malting, and that's a big problem. So again, fungicides are an option, but the timing is very particular. You have to get it right around flowering time, and if it's rainy during flowering time, that you can might not get it on there. And if your grain, if the farmer's grain line is above a certain level of the toxin, I think it's one part per million, that's pretty low. And you can have that rejected. And, Jimmy, you asked about costs. The difference between animal feed quality barley and malting quality barley is huge in terms of costs. I'm not sure what it is right now, but it's on the magnitude of dollars per bushel or dollars per whatever your unit of measurement is. And that makes a big difference to the grower. And that's one of the reasons why some growers have been reluctant to try barley, because it is tricky to grow. But we do have some pioneering growers in the state that are really starting to master it, as Paul said. And hopefully that continues to grow as they can share their knowledge.
Well, that's great. Hey, we're going to wrap it up soon. I just want to get Jason on one more time. So Jason, tell us about Western New York Pride and why you guys have been so committed to being a farm brewery.
Well, we are really looking at the logistics of community here. Buffalo has a very, very unique connection to its community. Every single person here has this unbelievable sense of pride, and it's very different than a lot of the other places that you travel to or you have friends that live in. And when you have visitors, you really get a feel for it, because you kind of take it for granted because it's something that you have as a part of who you are. And then people come into town and the next thing you know, they're just in awe as to how you can just go anywhere and meet new people and they absolutely leave as friends. So the idea behind what we were doing when we started was to bring that experience into the brewery from farm to pint. And the thought process was, can we connect people to the community in an additional way through beer? And the obvious way of doing that was to source it as locally as possible. And what we do then is we have a pretty good explanation with the new customers who walk in the door at the tasting room to explain to them not only why it matters, but what it is. And we're finding that there's so many people out there that still don't know what a farm brewery really represents and why it's so important to the community and to the industry as a whole. Because when they realize that we're buying grains that are grown, 30 miles to the north of us and then malted 35 miles to the east of us, and we're keeping everything that we do within a 100-mile radius, that's a big deal to a lot of those people. And more importantly, it's actually quite a surprise. So we really try to focus on delivering that experience that you get at any regional brewery at our establishment through local connectivity. And for us, that's really a big sense of who we are. And it's kind of defined our path in this whole, this gambit of being in business. And we're really taking it in stride, especially with what we've gone through over the last 12 months. I mean, we've seen, tremendous growth, and then all of a sudden this stagnation through the pandemic. And what's kind of come out of that is people are looking even closer at where they invest their money, where they get their products from, and how they can support their community. So what we're able to do now is really deliver that and expand the message further to explain that we're not the only ones doing this, that there's other ones across the state, and that we're working with the industry suppliers on all ends to make sure that we're trying to keep everybody involved at the local level. And I think Dave would echo this in that this really resonates with not only our customers, but with our staff and, our family and our friends. We kind of explained to them what we were doing. It may not have dawned on them at the time how important this is, but they've all come to kind of embrace it and celebrate it now with us. And they're some of our greatest proponents as well. So I think that's really, to summarize it, is what it all is all about for us is celebrating New York, celebrating, in our case, Western New York, what we can do within just our region, and designing something brand new with local ingredients. And one of the things I think that was a little bit missed that I'd like to touch on is we have a tremendous amount of local agriculture, and it includes fruits and veggies. So when you're looking at beer, there's nothing more interesting than throwing some local additives or adjuncts into your beer to give it that little extra flair, and realize that was a local product that was harvested 2 weeks ago. It's there. We do this with a lot of our suppliers, a lot of the farms that we work with. We schedule as close to their harvest as possible a beer that we can literally drive up the road as soon as it's harvested and then toss it into the mash or the boil or the secondary to get that fresh flavor, the colors that come out of things, and bring that into the experience that our customers get at the tasting room. And that really, when you explain that to people, that story is tremendously impactful.
Well, that's great. It's been a really great show. Paul, again, thank you so much for helping to put together the show. And Dan, really appreciate the work that you've done. And Jason and Dave, looking forward to visiting you guys one day out in Buffalo. We'll see how far the Bills get, but that's also a bit of exciting New York State news as well, to have a really good football team now. So thank you guys for everything. Big shout out to our engineer, Matt Patterson, and our intern, Caroline Fox. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us here on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, guys. Thank you.
Woo. Thanks, Jimmy.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.